Monday, July 29th. Again today, dispatches from Europe say the attempted German invasion of the British Isles is near. Intense Nazi military movements are reported in the occupied areas of France. And as another possible prelude to military action, all highway and railroad traffic between the occupied and unoccupied regions of France has been stopped, and French channel ports have been closed to all traffic. Now the news direct from Europe, Berlin and London, afterwards an analysis by Elmer Davis. Now to the German capital.
This is Berlin. One gets almost bitten by the headlines telling of one success after another for the Axis powers. The headlines all over page one of the Turkish Bildzeitung this morning, for example, say, Italian successes on all fronts. Alexandria and British warships bombed. Armored cars captured in Africa. Those are just one day's Italian successes as reported in Berlin. To them are added the latest German victories. Thus, the Fruckische Beobachter headline continues, German U-boat bags five armed ships from a convoy. Bombs destroy destroyers, an auxiliary cruiser, and merchant ships. Swansea and airfields in Cornwall bombed. Nothing but successes all along the line. Added to this are long stories each day about the low morale prevailing in England, which, according to the Berlin newspapers and radio, has already reached a state of panic. Anxiety in Britain grows daily, we are told, as the German Air Force continues its deadly work. The German press also takes issue with British claims that the United States will soon be able to supply Britain with 3,000 planes a month. These figures are scoffed at here. For a long, long time, say the German papers, America will not be able to make so many planes. This morning's papers in Berlin play up a telegram which Herr Hitler has sent the King of Italy on the 40th anniversary of his ascension to the throne. The Führer wishes him a further long reign, quote, after the victorious conclusion of the war which has been forced on our two peoples, end quote. Incidentally, whenever the war is referred to here in an official statement of any kind, it is always put that low, as the, quote, war which has been forced upon us, unquote. It was stated in the Wilhelmstrasse this morning that the Salzburg talks with the various Balkan powers can now be considered as concluded. Apparently, the only two Balkan states which have not yet taken the road to Germany in recent days, Yugoslavia and Greece, are not coming just now. But judging by the Belgrade press, there may be changes in Yugoslavia's attitude towards the so-called new order in Europe, too, just as there have been with such rapidity in Romania. The semi-official Belgrade newspaper Vrema is quoted in the Frankfurter Zeitung this morning as saying that a complete revision in Yugoslavia's relations with Germany and Italy are necessary. Too long, hints the Belgrade paper, have the Yugoslavs listened to the sweet voices of the Western democracies. It does begin to look as if the whole Balkans was jumping onto the bandwagon. No information whatsoever has been given out here as to what Herr Hitler had to tell his various callers from the Balkans the past few days. But the German press today makes it clear, as Reich Marshal Goering's paper, the Essen Nationale Zeitung, pointed out yesterday, that Germany stands for revision in southeastern Europe, or specifically, for rewarding the sensible claims of Hungary and Bulgaria on Romania, as it's put here. The Frankfurter Zeitung this morning speaks of the, quote, coming changes, unquote, in the Balkans, but hastens to add that Germany and Italy will make them reasonable. One thing is certain, says this paper, Romania must liquidate completely its past policies. It does seem as if the days of the Greater Romania, born of the last war, are numbered. The Wilhelmstrasse was very reserved this morning about its comment on the Havana conference. It said it preferred to wait until after the official communiques on the results of the conference come out. But judging from Mr. Warner's report to CBS listeners from Havana last night, there will be some disappointment in German editorial rooms, which have been emphasizing here the sharp resistance of many of the South American states to many of the projects put forward by the United States. This is William L. Shirer in Berlin, returning you to Columbia in New York.
This is New York. Press Association dispatches from Vichy, France, tell of important British air raids on French coastal districts. And according to the Vichy stories, the government of Marshal Pétain has lodged a strong protest to Britain against violent air raids on Cherbourg, Nantes, and Saint-Nazaire. The reports of these raids thus far come only from France, but it is reported that important German Air Force and naval unit concentrations are at these points. Now for the latest news from the British capital, reported by Eric Severide. Go ahead, London.
This is London. German bombers staged two intense raids on the southeast coast this morning. Only sparse reports about them are available yet. However, the Air Force believes that anti-aircraft fire was remarkably successful this time. Shells are reported to have exploded right in the midst of the second wave of 40 German dive bombers. The estimate at the moment is about 20 raiding planes destroyed. The second wave came immediately after the first. The raiders flew in out of the sun, as they usually do on these early morning attacks. We have no information yet about their targets or their success with bombs. This morning, the press of London gives headlines to the German action in sealing up the occupied areas of France. The Express this morning calls this the invasion zone. This zone of France includes the channel ports facing Britain. The Germans now forbid anyone, including French people, on their way home to enter. The London press gives the most obvious interpretation of this move. The invasion, they believe, is now soon to come. Britain yesterday sent a formal protest to Romania for her action in expropriating British oil properties and seizing British barges. And today, the British government is protesting once more, this time to Tokyo. Britain wants an explanation of the sudden arrest of the 11 British businessmen, some of them key figures in British-Japanese trade relations. Another man, the British correspondent for Reuters, who was arrested, is reported dead this morning. He said he had jumped from his window. Sir Robert Craigie, the British ambassador in Tokyo, called at the Japanese Foreign Office for explanations this morning. Yesterday, during their raids, the Germans tried out single-engine Messerschmitt 109 fighters, sending them into dive bombs. They each carry one medium bomb. We're told today that Spitfires destroyed five of these fighter bombers. The total of Nazi planes knocked out over the weekend was at least 13. That's in addition to those destroyed this morning. A German invasion may be coming, and air raids do go on constantly over the southern and eastern coast. But yesterday, English people by the hundreds went swimming on the beach of Brighton. It's just a few minutes bomber flight from German bases in France. They stretched and slept in the sun all day. In the distance, they could hear the hum of planes and the bursting of anti-aircraft shells. The ban on bathing there was imposed a month ago, and yesterday lifted for the first time. Home defense of Britain is still expanding. Henceforth, Britain's 20,000 miles of railway lines will be patrolled from dark to dawn by members of the Home Guard. It will take about 200,000 men for the job, all of them volunteers. Sentries will guard the 8,000 signal boxes along the right-of-way. These men, of course, are unpaid. They go on guard duty when their regular working hours in factories and mines and offices are ended. Another move of the government for precautions against parachutists was to issue this order. Church bells shall not be rung except as an alarm that enemy troops have landed nearby. England's proud guild of bell ringers are through for the time. Only the military or home guards are allowed under this order to pull the bell rope. Well, the bell ringers are more than skeptical. They point out that it takes months to learn how to ring a big bell. They predict that the first time an inexperienced soldier pulls on an unfamiliar rope, two things are going to happen. A, no sound will come forth. B, the soldier will either hang himself or be jerked up to the belfry ceiling and cracked on the skull. There are 35,000 real bell ringers in the parishes of England. They think they ought to have the job, whether it be for a call to worship or a call to arms. And from now on, the housewives of England are enrolled for collective duty. Big ads appeared in all the London papers today, urging them to save their paper, bones, and metal. From waste paper and cardboard, cartridge wads, rifle and shell cases will be made. Blue will come from bones, and the metal is for ships and planes. This is London, returning you now to Columbia in New York.
And that was Eric Sefarad reporting from London. Here in our New York studios is Alma Davis, who will now give you his analysis of the latest news. Mr. Davis.
These apparent prospects this morning that the German attack may be imminent are, of course, all drawn from inferences, largely the closing of these areas in northern France, which presumably are shut off to all Frenchmen, because the Germans don't want the British or the French to know what troop movements are going on there. It's still impossible, of course, to be sure what the plans of the Axis powers may be, but it has been 5 weeks since the conclusion of hostilities in France, and those 5 weeks, of course, have given the British an invaluable opportunity to get ready. They have naturally also given the Germans an opportunity to get ready for the attack, and a great deal of complicated preparation would certainly be necessary for any attempt to invade England, if that is what the Germans have in mind, of which we have no confidence as yet. Nevertheless, there is this one great advantage for the British that from the latter part of September, the channel begins to get rough and movements of small shipping will be greatly handicapped. These barges, of which we have read that the Germans have collected such numbers in Dutch and French and Belgian ports, possibly for the purpose of transporting troops, would find crossing the channel a pretty difficult job when the fall storm set in. And the German torpedo speedboats, on which they are apparently counting to neutralize large part of the British naval opposition, would also be tossed around considerably by the waves of the channel. This, of course, again, is all assumption that they are going to attack, and the long delay has sometimes led to the belief that perhaps they are going to depend on submarine and air blockade and not make an attack at all. If they are going to attack, they have probably not more than about 7 weeks of good weather left. However, they could, if they attacked in great force, they no doubt might hope that they could finish the matter before that time. But the British have had all this time to get ready, and if their defenses are anything like as good as reported, it might be a pretty tough job. The French government is reported to have made an energetic protest against British raids on Cherbourg, Nantes, and Saint-Nazaire, all of them French ports from which vessels could start out for an attack on the British Isles, and in the case of Cherbourg at least, a possible base for seaplanes as well as for other operations against Britain. This protest by the Pétain ministry is very natural, of course. These are French towns, and they don't like to be bombed by their late allies, but when the Pétain ministry not only surrendered, but surrendered more completely than there seemed to be any need for at the moment when they made those provisions which turned over to the Germans most of the French war material in land and in the air, when they made it possible for the Germans to use their ports as bases for an attack on Britain, they could hardly have expected that the British would not strike back at those bases, even if they happened to belong to a lately friendly power and to be occupied by a still friendly people. This Pétain ministry, the Laval ministry more correctly, is of course supported by a certain group of Frenchmen, but there's been no opportunity to find out whether it ever had the support of anything like the majority of the French, and it seems highly unlikely in view of the deep-rooted Republican tradition in France. There's no question that the British wouldn't like to bomb these French towns, but if they are now effective German naval bases from which the attack on England can be started off, it's pretty hard to see what else the British might do. The British are in trouble, as you heard, in various quarters. They're in trouble now in Japan on the old principle that the time to hit a man is when he's down. The Japanese are taking a firm stand against the British in the Far East, and they have now arrested 12 prominent British residents of Japan on charges which are still unexplained. The story that one of them, the Reuters correspondent in Tokyo, jumped out of the window of the police station, according to some rumors, is still unconfirmed and need not be accepted yet, but it could be true, of course. And meanwhile, there are these dozen prominent citizens who are locked up, and it is merely rumor that they are held in connection with Japanese military secrets, which the British in the Far East say is ridiculous. But the whole point is that the Japanese have discovered that now is the time to press their demands on Britain. They may change their minds if the German attack should be repulsed.
And with the news thus analyzed by Elmer Davis from New York, we conclude this morning report of European developments. William L. Shara was heard from Berlin, and Eric Severide reported from London. Larry Elliott speaking. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.